Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. I'm Scott Bennett. This is Great Awakenings on GlobalFreedomTV.com. We are so honored for you to be joining us tonight. We are going to be exploring the social, political, economic, and legal and military intelligence matters with the great Dr. Stephen Pidgeon. We're going to jump right into it. There are so many things to discuss. Stephen, it is wonderful to have you on with us. I can't wait to jump into this discussion. Let me start out with this quick video on 9/11, because 9/11 serves as the foundation for our entire conversation about what's happened to this country, where we've gone, what's going to be coming next. So let me jump into this video real quick, and we will come right back. Here we go.
Thank you. This is Scott Bennett.
Well, Stephen Pigeon, we are
tonight, and we are coming to you on September 5th, 2016. And we have today probably one of the most.
So 9/11, that's a quick video. We made that a few years ago when we did an interview with Barbara Honegger, who did Behind the Smoke Curtain, analyzing the Pentagon attacks. And there's so much material. But to summarize it, Barbara Honegger goes into how there were explosions before 9:35, 9:40, when allegedly a plane had struck. So there were explosions before that. It was also proven with the hole in the side of the Pentagon that an Army black enlisted sergeant walked through. So there was no fire. There was no smoke. She revealed the Israeli firm that had done the construction of the portion of the Pentagon that had been struck. They also did the cleanup. I think they were also doing the Twin Towers cleanup. But the Pentagon strike was particularly ominous because it triggered the entire military juggernaut into the global terror wars and triggered all sorts of other things. The Patriot Act, a tyrannical empire state in the making, the imprisonment of Susan Lindauer was a consequence of that under the Patriot Act, where they can indict you with charges and witnesses that they don't have to divulge. On and on and on. And I'll end it by saying what always resonates most with me is the fact that no military officers have stood up and made a similar presentation on the steps of the Supreme Court or the Lincoln Memorial or in front of the White House in their uniforms to declare as military officers, the entire event of the 9/11 attacks has been fraudulent. It has been a false flag. It was a betrayal of every American, and the American people entrusted military officers as the defenders, as the preservers of the Republic by force of arms. And no one stood up the next day from the Pentagon to say this is absolutely fraudulent. There was no plane. There was no attack. There's no skid marks in the grass. There's no wings. There's no tail. There's no luggage. There's no wheels. There's no Rolls-Royce engines. There's nothing. And the impossibility of a plane puncturing through three or four layers of the Pentagon to poke its nose out the other side is ludicrous. And the original photographs of the first moments of the Pentagon strike with floors still intact that then collapsed or were collapsed later proves that a plane silhouette could not have hit these portions. Of course, we're now seeing more and more material of this being a cruise missile that hit the Pentagon. But I am shocked and infuriated, disgusted beyond words at the military personnel that have been so cowardly and treasonous as to cover up and be silent about this 9/11 fraud. And they have dishonored their oath. They have dishonored their fathers. They are not worthy of calling themselves military men of any description. And especially people like Flynn and others who have made a living off of this fraudulent false terror war since 9/11 that has carried us to the brink of annihilation and has caused finally the majority of the world to divorce us. And I think the majority of the world is going to bring a isolation and punishment against this nation because of what we've done since 9/11 that words can't even convey. And of course, God is in charge of all that. But Stephen, I'll hand it to you to begin our discussion on the 9/11 event, the materials, the videos, the pictures, the photographs, and what stands out. What stands out to you? What does it signify? What does it mean? What was it? And what has it done to us? And where are we going because of it? Stephen Pigeon.
Well, thank you, Scott. Well, I think there was a kind of a confluence of events that took place there. One is the World Trade Center. You know, there was a certain amount of economic decline that was taking place in the country at that time. Because, of course, the Reagan years had become a very profitable time. And it was a profitable time primarily because of the massive tax decrease that had taken place in 1982, which was the only thing that saved the United States. Because if you go back to the Carter years, this country was choking and we were dying then. And We had at that time, the top tax rate was 90% on $1 million of income, 90%. And Reagan took a look at this, and it wasn't just Reagan. There was a guy named Armour, I think his name was, out of Texas, who had proposed a very sophisticated tax package that was essentially a libertarian package that reduced the top rate down to 28%. And this was pursuant to the Laffer curve, by the way. And Laffer made the point with Reagan, and he said, look, there's a point where if the taxes are too high, then the productivity goes down and money goes offshore. If the taxes are too low, then you've left money on the table. So there's a point that's right in the middle that the tax is perfect, that you're getting all the money that you can possibly get. And you've gotten that because you've secured all of this productivity and the repatriation of cash that is working elsewhere.
Yes.
And anybody with a brain knows that when you have, for instance, a capital gains tax that are above 20%, or you have a rate that's above 28% in the top bracket, that you're above the Laffer curve. You've gone into diminishing returns. You left money on the table because money has fled. It's gone elsewhere. But don't tell it to a Democrat, because they equate the higher percentage as more revenue. Now, they've got almost no revenue coming in right now from the tax field because their spending is ridiculous. I mean, they spent 100% of the tax revenues that came in this year on April 15th were gone by the end of April. Then they had another $2 trillion plus to spend, right, going on these bogus programs. So the point is that what happened was Reagan started this Reagan boom. Moving the tax rate to 28% caused an explosion of growth in the United States. And from 82 to 86, we really ramped it up. I mean, it was a tremendous time of recreating the American dream. And then, of course, George Bush was responsible for the shooting of Ronald Reagan. It was the son of his business partner in Zapata Oil that shot Reagan.
Hinckley.
And then, yeah, Hinckley. And then Bush began to assume control of the presidency. He at all times was not a natural born citizen. He was a usurper, born a German Nazi, George Scherf. And he began to take control of the presidency entirely. In fact, he orchestrated the presidency in 1991, that he would step down after holding a 90% approval rating for what he did in Iraq. He was going to step down and give the presidency to a Democrat for 8 years on the condition that his son would be president for 8 years. And then the third person at the table, Sheikh bin Talal, representing Saudi money, said on the condition that a Muslim becomes president for 8 years. All of this was decided in 1991. Russian intelligence knew of it and informed Americans in the mid-90s that this was going to be the case, that Barack Obama was going to be the president of the United States. They forecasted this in the 90s because they were privy to this intelligence information. Well, I think when H.W. planned to have his son take over the presidency, he was expecting Jeb Bush to take it, not Dummy George, right? But Dummy George is the one that got exalted by all the Texas brethren. He can beat Al Gore. Well, who couldn't beat Al Gore? I mean, Al Gore was such a horrific candidate. Al Gore's past included when he was in Vietnam, his dad made sure, you're not going to do any fighting, Al. You know, you're the senator, son. I'm going to take care of you. You're not going to do any fighting. You can stay back in Saigon and smoke pot, which is what he did. And he absolutely blew his brains out on pot while he was in Vietnam. And to the point when he came, he was the kind of guy that when he came back to Tennessee, he was a 7-8 bong guy in the morning, you know, 8 drags on a bong in the morning, every morning until we get to 1978. And then his dad's like, if you want a political career, you got to stop that. So he did. And guess what? When he did, he came down with massive bipolar disorder. And the bipolar in Al Gore is so severe that he was on lithium and all this other stuff. I mean, he was, you know, he had bad bipolar. Well, he tried to put his hat in the ring in 86, and he was 86th in 86 because of this bipolar issue. And Joe Biden was 86th in 86 because of the plagiarism issue, right? These guys ran for president before, and they were kicked to the curb because they were horrible candidates. And anyway, so Gore kind of retreated, but he was picked up by, you know, by Bill Clinton to come on the team. And Bill Clinton had no respect for Al Gore. It was like, you're a dummy. You're an absolute dummy. You know, I mean, Al Gore couldn't recognize a bust of Thomas Jefferson. So Clinton is like, just shut up. Go away. Go hang out at the vice president's house. Mm-hmm. So Al Gore, you got this guy who was such a fruitcake that he believed that New York was going to be under 15 feet of water by 2010. And by the way, he made what, $60 million saying that, right? And but of course, the Democrats were prepared to put him in office. Why not? Because the Democrats at their root are the military-industrial complex. When you ask yourself the question, why hasn't a Pentagon officer stood up? Because they don't have any loyalty or oath to the Constitution. They do, but they don't recognize it. Their loyalty and their oath is to Raytheon. It's to, you know, it's to these various military contractors. See, the Pentagon should not be allowed to make any funding decisions whatsoever. It should be taken away from the Pentagon. What you guys do is you control troop movements. You work strategy. You do this. You educate yourself. You control the troops. You do all that. But you're not making one spending decision. We're not going to pay. You know that famous story about when America shot the astronauts up to the space station and they found out that a pen doesn't work in space. So we spent $12 million developing an anti-gravity pen. The Russians switched to a pencil, right? I mean, this was the kind of thinking that was going on, right? And even during the time of Reagan, I forget what it was, $800 hammer, something like this, you know, $2,000 toilet seat, these kinds of things that were going on. And it's all because the Pentagon is in control of its own budget. And if you disagree with the budget, well, then guess what? You get a Hellfire missile. You try to audit the budget, well, then you get a Hellfire missile. You know, Rumsfeld, let's talk evil about the dead for a minute, right? Rumsfeld, I talked to a guy that was, I think he's dead now. He was the CIA pilot that flew Donald Rumsfeld out of Santiago, Chile, following the assassination of Allende, because Allende had nationalized ITT, the phone company down there. And ITT paid them $40,000 to go down to assassinate Allende. And Rumsfeld was one of the ops that did it. And this friend of mine is the one that flew him over the Andes into Argentina. So, you know, Rumsfeld was, you know, he was a dirty player.
Yes.
And he stayed dirty. And so he comes out the day before knowing full well that there's going to be an event. And he comes out and says, oh, yeah, we got $2.3 trillion, you know, missing, which I think now is $30 trillion over at the Pentagon that they can't. No, it's $23 trillion. That they can't find. No, excuse me. Let me correct it. It's $11 trillion they can't find. Well, we don't know what happened to that. That money's just disappeared, said the guy sitting in a, you know, in a 5,000 square foot house on the Potomac, right? He's got a house bigger than George Washington's Mount Vernon. I don't know what happened to the money. It disappeared. You know, we don't know what happened. That was must have been a procurement problem. Well, the fact is that you've got inherent corruption, systemic corruption at the Pentagon, because you're allowing the guys who kill for a living to also spend the money on getting their killing devices. So if you disagree with the contract, you know, guess what? You're shipped out to Afghanistan the hard way. And Obama actually said this openly. He said, if I don't go along with this, they'll kill me. He said that openly. So you had this push. We need to be at war. I mean, if you're a general, you get in the military, and what do you want to do? You want to lead troops. You know, what do you really want to do when you're a general? You want to be in Ukraine. You want to be in that ground situation. I want to lead a blitzkrieg. I want to do tank warfare. I want to do a Rommel thing. I want to be Patton's reputation. I want to get this. I want to do that. This way, you're not thinking I want to sit here at a desk and pencil out ideas forever and ever and practice going to war. I want ribbons, you know? And so these guys want to go to war, and it's incumbent upon the executive, who's a civilian by design, to say, no, we're not going to war, which is what Trump did. No, we're not going to do that. We want to go in there and pound Syria. Let's kick out, you know, Bashar al-Assad. No, we're not going to do that. Oh, well, then we're going to get you. We're going to get your number, buddy. No war with Russia. We're going to get you. We got your number. We're coming for you. And so the military-industrial complex is a big problem. But when you talk about the events leading into 9/11, so here you had Bill Clinton, who was busy looting the country when he was president. You know, he was looting the girls that were working for him, you know, sexually, and looting and doing the same thing to the country financially. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, he was responsible for taking a whole bunch of our technology and putting it in the hands of the Communist Party.
Yes.
And he would say, and he gave communist agents open access to Roswell, New Mexico, and to the other sites down there in New Mexico. Open access. They could, you know, have their own laptops down there, do whatever. He had a major Chinese spy working for him. I forget what the guy's name was, Thunder Chief. They had a nickname. But he was a bad dude. He was killing people. And he was like, I don't know, the number two man in the Chinese Communist Party was working for Bill Clinton. And like I said, I used to know these names very well, but this was in the 90s, so I don't remember them that well now. But at any rate, the Clintons were selling American technology to the Chinese Communist Party and putting the money in their own pocket. See, that's how it worked. That's what looting is. If you were a person of ethics and you decide to sell somebody's technology, that would have to come back to the company or it would have to come back to the government. But that's not what happened with Clinton. He sold it out and put the money in his own pocket. And this would eventually result in Hillary Clinton doing the Uranium One deal with Bill's help, using Frank Giustra out of Vancouver to sell 40% of America's uranium directly to Russia and then take $145 million kickback to the Clinton Foundation from Frank Giustra. Right? I mean, that's what happened.
Yep.
And so when you get into 9/11, so when we get into the Clinton administration, the Clinton administration, he wanted to tax George Bush, largest tax increase in history. Right? Remember, he said, read my lips. Remember?
Yeah,
in the 1988 campaign, read my lips. No new taxes. 1990, biggest tax increase in American history. 1992, first year of Bill Clinton's presidency, biggest tax increase in history. 1993, biggest tax increase in history. 1996, biggest tax increase in history. 1997, markets start to crash all over the world. How'd that happen? It's because greedy Democrats couldn't stop raising taxes and money started to flee. And one certain person, George Soros, collapsed an English bank, one of the big English banks.
Yes. Yes.
And he did it by shorting the currency in Hong Kong.
Yes.
And so
Chinese hate George Soros for that. In their book, Irregular Warfare, they call Soros an economic terrorist and such.
Oh, he absolutely is an economic terrorist. He's persona non grata in Russia. They kicked his butt out.
Yes,
said, you're not hanging out here at all. You're gone. And we're seizing all your assets. So yes. Get out, you know. Yes. And then he leaves Russia and comes here.
Yes.
Right?
Sets up a foundation in Ukraine, too, that's been undermining it for 20 years.
Well, the Open Society Foundation is the parent company that runs all these NGOs. And these NGOs are the ones that engaged in the color revolutions.
Yes.
One of his NGOs that was behind the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, one of his NGOs that was behind the Rose Revolution in Georgia. Yes. And he has been running a purple revolution in the United States that it's undisclosed.
That's right.
But that's what's been going on. And he's doing this in order to, again, loot these countries. He loots these countries and puts the money in his own pocket. Of course, I think he died this year. But now it's his son doing it. And as far as I can tell, he's as bad as dad. And so at any rate, the theory was that Soros caused this collapse in the markets in Hong Kong, which became a collapse in all of the Asian markets, which resulted in the default on IMF loans in Mexico, followed by a default by Russia, all by August of 1998, which brought contagion home to the United States, which allowed Greenspan to begin quantitative easing. So this is monetizing the market, monetizing the debt, monetizing the stock market, quantitative easing. That is to say, the Fed itself is buying stock to keep the stock from going down. So the markets become immediately fraudulent. They're completely fraudulent as of 1998. So they're doing this. And so the Fed, Greenspan, is pumping $100 billion a month into the markets from August 1998 right on up until January of 2001. And when George Bush won the election, Greenspan said, enough of that. I'm not doing any more quantitative easing. That's what he said. I'm done. I'm finished. I'm not doing any. And nobody believed him. The stock market is unbeatable. It can't go down because the Fed will make sure it doesn't go down. So invest, 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 invest. And it took them all the way to April to realize, hey, gee, guess what? The Fed's not priming the pump anymore. And down goes the market. Now, the market started its crash in April of 2001 when Al Gore came out to Seattle and he told Bill Gates, you need to back me. And Gates said, I'm not going to do it. Don't come out here and threaten me. I'm not going to do that. Forget it. I'm not political. I'm not going to give you any money. So Al Gore goes back to D.C. and he hires his attorney to bring an antitrust lawsuit to break up Microsoft.
Yes.
And this judge comes out on the table and says, we're going to do to Microsoft what we did to AT&T. Right. And the following day, the NASDAQ lost 40% of its value.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, the case is like, well, we're kidding. Hold it. You never heard any more of that case. It went away. But that market crash started a crash that was non-ending. Okay. It was going to take us back to 1978. Mm-hmm. Because the taxes had gone back to that place. So now we might as well go back to where we were. Stagflation, high interest rates, collapsing dollar, all of this stuff. So George Bush gets together with his cronies, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, right? And they get in a room, well, what can we do? What can we do? Well, war is the answer. War is the answer. Well, how are we going to do war? Well, we have to have an event that gives us a reason to have war, right? And so, you know, Tim Osman, also known as Osama bin Laden, CIA agent, yeah, right? Working with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan on behalf of the United States, creating the list of guys in the Mujahideen that work for us called Al-Qaeda.
Yes.
These were agents that were working for us, Al-Qaeda. They were on American payroll. He was our interface man with these agents in Afghanistan. And guess who his interface was in Pakistan? A certain Arab speaker named Barack Obama. Mm. Whose mother was stationed in Lahore, Pakistan at the time, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And who was at all material times the protege of Sheikh bin Talal, the man who orchestrated the arrangement of the presidents in 1991, mm-hmm, who, by the way, died during the Trump tenure, tortured to death by bin Salman in Saudi Arabia. Well, but maybe it wasn't bin Salman. Maybe it was somebody else he knew, mm-hmm, or something. Mm-hmm. But the last I heard was Sheikh bin Talal was hanging by his heels at the palace, because he tried to assassinate bin Salman in Las Vegas, yes, on October 1st.
Yes.
Okay. So here's the situation. So we got to have a false flag. Well, one thing I want to point out is it was understood by a lot of people, and of course they tried to bury it in the press, that all of the gold from Fort Knox had been moved into the basement of the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what happened. You might recall that during the Clinton administration, they tried to take down the World Trade Center with a, yes, set of bombs in the garage.
1993.
And it didn't work out. Let's touch off all these explosives. Well, guess what? This building is way too tough for that. Mm-hmm. Those explosives aren't going to work. Okay. Well, I think the reason they were trying to do that is they had already moved all that gold. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, they claim they've got gold still in Fort Knox. Is it gold or is it just merely gold-plated tungsten? Right?
The latter.
Yeah. So here we are. So these are the events that's going on. So we've had this market crash. We've got a huge correction going on in the Dow, 60% correction in NASDAQ, 40% correction in the Dow that begins in April of 2001. Oh, we got to do something. Well, what's it look like? Let's do false flag. What are the choices? Well, one of the choices we could do is we could talk to this new Jewish landlord that just bought the World Trade Center and who just got it insured against this particular kind of catastrophic damage. Let's talk to him and see if we can do a controlled demolition.
Larry Silverstein, double indemnity, doubly insured, both buildings. Oh, if I have two terrorist attacks, I'll be paid for each one separately.
Nice clause, right? That's what you call the Santa clause, right? So here they are with this double indemnity. We're going to do a controlled demolition, right? Well, there could be some collateral damage. Well, it's collateral damage, whatever. Just because it's a couple of hundred firemen, a couple of hundred police, whose families are going to be affected forever, don't let that cross your mind there, Cheney. Don't let that bother you at all.
And people jumping out of buildings.
Yeah. Heinous. And, you know, the thing is that, okay, all right. So you have those fires. Now, I mean, when you see those fires, when you look at that construction of that building, right, there were problems. So the biggest problem with that building was that it was laden with asbestos.
Yes.
which meant that it was out of code in New York, and it was the, you know, these were the largest buildings in New York, and they were out of code.
Which also means, though, they could not burn. You couldn't burn those things down if you had 10 years of blowtorches because of the amount of asbestos that were in there.
Yeah, plus it's concrete, steel, and glass.
Yes.
I mean, that's, I mean, you know, yeah, you've got some asbestos, you know, roofing tiles.
Yeah.
But everything else is concrete, steel, and glass. So, and you got to remember that the way that building was built, go back and look at the original videos of the construction. Mm-hmm. You've got this solid concrete elevator core, mm-hmm, that's running up 100 stories, right? This solid concrete elevator, and then the steel I-beams coming off of that. And you got to remember, people don't recognize this. When they think about a plane, they think a plane is like some kind of heavy steel or something. A plane is aluminum foil.
Yes.
I mean, look, it's titanium, but it is literally, it's glorified aluminum foil.
Yes.
And so you're literally in an aluminum tube. When you're flying in an aluminum tube, a titanium tube. And those titanium tubes, they crinkle on demand. I mean, the slightest little bit of whatever destroys the body of an airplane. Look at all these plane crashes. Oh, it went off the runway. Well, how would a runway affect a steel plane? It wouldn't affect it at all. But when you're in a titanium plane, you go a little bit off the runway, cool, the whole nose falls off and this, you know, the wings fall off and all this other stuff because it's titanium, thin titanium. Okay. So you got this thin titanium plane that's got a JP5 fuel, burns at a certain temperature, and it comes into the building and it hits this absolute wall of concrete, this reinforced structure of concrete that is designed to hold multiple elevators, high-speed elevators going up and down. This is what it hits. Guess what? The concrete elevator shaft wins and the plane loses. It doesn't go through the building. The plane loses and the elevator shaft wins. Okay, so now you got fires. Now let's say you got JP5 jet fuel and you got thousands of gallons of it, which is possible given that if they were short range. And they come in, they hit, and you got thousands of gallons of JP5. So JP5 is going to burn until the fuel's gone. How long do you see these planes burn when you see a jet crash? It doesn't happen. The fuel burns up pretty quickly. But here we got this fire going on and on and on. What caused 100 stories of concrete elevator shaft to come down? Now, I'm just going to tell you my theory, Scott, okay?
Mm-hmm. And let me show this picture real quick, because it'll like this. There's your building you're just describing, Stephen. So
there you go.
You see, here's the World Trade Center Tower. Here's the inner core. This is when it was being built. So you got the cement, you got the external steel. Again, these are old-fashioned American steel made in the 60s. They didn't mess around. No China steel. This is American steel. And then the inner core of American steel. This is all concrete. Aluminum tubes, an aluminum plane crashing in is not going the speed of light. In fact, it's impossible for a plane to be flying fast, as they say they were at this altitude, because of the density of the air with water vapor. It's thinner at 30,000 feet, but at this rate, it can't crash in at the speed they said. And if it did crash in, it would bend like a net, like a spider's web, and catch, and then everything would fall. But here is what they said. And they presumed to try and argue that it hit here, punctured, and went all the way through, like, okay, all the way through. Let's just say it hit here. It punctures through and punctures through this and punctures out the other side.
Right. Scott, what's not being shown here, when you look at that top steel structure, okay?
Yep.
That top steel structure is going to be completely enveloped in concrete around the elevator shaft. In other words, they didn't just put sheetrock on top of this steel. This was concrete that wrapped around that whole section. And so you're talking about a massive, massive structure that is built extremely strong, that would withstand the striking of even a 747 or even a giant Ilyushin, would have a hard time coming up against that particular kind of building. So, yeah, there you go. So you can see that with that kind of superstructure going on, but look at the problem. You've got these two huge buildings that are completely out of code. They're full of asbestos. Now, yeah. With them being full of asbestos, ultimately what's, and the buildings were, I forget what they were, 30%, 40% vacant. These buildings were mostly vacant. Why? Because they were considered carcinogenic. They had asbestos in them. People were breathing that stuff, peel on and on and on. And so the new owner was looking at a tremendous, you know, tens of millions of dollars to clean out that asbestos and retrofit it. Yeah. Cheaper to just demolish it and build something new.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to, you know, we used to have a saying up here in Alaska, you know, hey, let's bust this joint up. And then the owner would say, you know, let's do that after the fire, you know, after we get the insurance, right? Yeah. After the fire. And so, you know, the thing is that insurance fraud is very common among these kinds of buildings. And if you can get away with it, if you get away with it and you collect your insurance check, well, then you're good. So the question is what the narrative is going to be. What we have to have a narrative that's going to be strong enough so that we can collect the insurance. So what narrative is that going to be? Well, let's use terrorists. Mm-hmm. Let's use terrorists. Let's use that narrative. Okay. So let's take a look at that narrative for just a second and talk about it. Mm-hmm. There were 19 terrorists, 13 of which were Saudi intelligence. Okay. 13 agents, Saudi intelligence, take down the World Trade Center. So that means we have to invade Afghanistan and Iraq. Okay, I'm following the logic here, George. I'm getting where you're coming from. If you got Saudi Arabian agents that take down your two largest buildings, you want to attack their enemies, right? Mm-hmm. This is, I'm talking about their narrative here, Scott. I'm not talking about my narrative. I'm talking about their narrative. Mm-hmm. 13 of these were Saudi agents, right? That they now know, by the way, it was just leaked recently, several of them were being recruited by the CIA and were being trained by the CIA at this time. Okay. So if you believe 13 terrorists or the 19 terrorists, but yeah, there you go. Look at this. There you go. Look at that. That's just a lamppost. And look at what it's doing to that plane. Just a lamppost, right? And so when you you can believe all that stuff that you want. There were planes crashing into all this other stuff. But when it comes to the destruction of the buildings and those buildings coming down, this is going to take a force that is going to be of really an unprecedented level of force. Now, let's talk about what was actually admitted during this event. You know, the Israelis claim that they've got several hundred nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And they try to claim that it came from the Dimona nuclear power plant where they enriched uranium and built their own nuclear weapons. That's an absolute fabrication. The nuclear weapons that the Israelis have were given to them by the United States, and they are tactical howitzer munitions. Mm-hmm. And so these are 6 kiloton and 12 kiloton warheads, tops. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're small nukes. And they're used for tactical purposes. They're a tactical nuke. You can shoot them from a howitzer and hit something in the field. Mm-hmm. 6 kiloton and 12 kiloton. Now, this, so the 6 kiloton is a small bomb, but, you know, big enough for me. Trust me. I think it was a 6 kiloton that went off in Lebanon that hit that. Yeah, I mean, this is an impossible picture. It's just impossible. It's impossible. This is people thinking up stuff that you'd have to believe that they're flying an F-15. And I'm thinking, I didn't think you could do it with an F-15. But when you talk about these nukes, look, they have technology now that they can direct the force of a nuclear weapon. Like, for instance, in bunker buster bombs, they take a bunker buster and they drive this bomb, these JDAMs, into the ground. And then the nuke directs its nuclear power into the ground. So if you've got a bunker that's deep in the ground, 30 stories in the ground or whatever, this nuke is going to, its power is directed downward into the ground to destroy what's in the bunker. Yeah. And so these are directed nuclear weapons. All right. So if you take a small yield weapon, like a 6 kiloton warhead, and you place it at the bottom of the World Trade Center, that power, all of that nuclear power goes right up through the core of the tower. It goes right up through the core of the tower. And you have to remember that in going up through the core of the tower, it comes up through the core of the tower at 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, see if you can, Scott, see if you can pull up a video of the bomb going off in Beirut, Lebanon, when the so-called chemical plant blew up in Beirut, Lebanon. And we'll get an idea, the force of a 6-kiloton nuclear weapon. Now, so when you see this, so I think that this is my opinion, my humble opinion, that these were 2 6-kiloton weapons that were at the bottom of the towers that went off. And when they went off, they completely liquefied the elevator shaft and caused the entire implosion of the building. This was controlled demolition. Now, in that way, you know, at the end of this thing, the New York Times tries to claim, you know, you saw the footage of the bottom of the tower. It was, it looked to be a puddle of melted alloy at the bottom of the tower. And they had to wear hazmat suits and everything else in there. Why? Because it was radioactive. And they claimed, oh, we found a door with scratches on it. We opened the door. Gee, there was all the gold, right? There was all the gold that was kept in the World Trade Center, which wasn't very much. It was only very little. It belonged to the Bank of Nova Scotia. You know, this is all cover and pablum. So at any rate, if this was a controlled demolition, then whoever touched off this demolition said, we've got collateral damage, so what? Right? And the collateral damage, so what, were all the lives lost in 9/11. Now, what happened after that? Well, the end of the Republic. The Republic ended and tyranny began with the Patriot Act and the suspension of habeas corpus. And a lot of this was done, okay, well, let's make up a good story as to why these buildings came down. And then since we're making up the story about terrorism, let's take advantage of this opportunity to exact more federal power. Let's take this opportunity to exact more tyranny. Let's take this opportunity to exact more controls. And which is what they did. Okay, here we go. Now, this supposedly was a chemical bomb, right?
Yep, watch.
That's the actual chemical fire. That is a nuclear weapon. Boom. That's a nuclear. There you go. You see it?
Yep.
Now that's the plasma. There's the mushroom cloud. Hold on a second. That's the plasma blast. And in addition to that, you can see the static electricity rolling up in the mushroom cloud. You see a mushroom cloud develop after that. You have the force of the plasma blast blowing out into the city of Beirut in a substantial way. Now watch, you can see it again, watch. Boom, see that? There's the plasma blast. See how expansive the explosion is?
Like a massive cotton ball, yep.
Yeah, see it? Yeah. So now, in my opinion, this was a 6-kiloton nuclear weapon. Not a 12-kiloton, a 6-kiloton nuclear weapon. And I do not believe that these are the only nukes that have been used. I believe there have been 2 nukes used in Syria and 2 nukes used in Yemen. And they're both in the tactical nuclear category. That is to say 12 kiloton or less. Okay. And again, this is my opinion. Okay. This is my opinion. You can look at it and reach your own conclusions, but this is my opinion. So under these circumstances, we see that people have been getting away with, frame by frame right there. You can see it right there, Scott. People have been getting, look at that. Huh? Conventional explosive? No. So at any rate, this is the kind of stuff that is being hidden from the American public. We're not told the truth by anyone. See the mushroom cloud developing right there? Yeah. See it? Straight up right there? That's a mushroom cloud coming out of that. And this is why it's important for the American people to know that these kinds of things that are going on but with the military-industrial complex are things that are nothing but war and war all the time, because nobody can tell them no, and nobody can tell them no because we have a systemic problem in terms of allowing the Pentagon to fund itself. The funding needs to be completely taken away from the Pentagon. You guys do war, we'll tell you what equipment you're going to get. We'll have a separate entity tell you what equipment you're going to get, not the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And so at any rate, once the Patriot Act came in and George Bush suspended the writ of habeas corpus and declared an emergency, we've never come out of that emergency. We're in an emergency ever since. No. And then we're in an emergency to the point that this arrogant pinhead halfwit that calls herself the governor of New Mexico, oh, we've got an emergency here. So with that emergency, everybody has to, everybody has to give up their firearms now. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask the governor of New Mexico, have you ever taken any funding from a Mexican drug cartel, mm-hmm, who have instructed you to disarm the people of New Mexico so that they can have complete control over the citizens in that state? Have you ever done that? I'd like to know if you have. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get a little audit of her records to see how many millions are sitting in her offshore bank account as a result of her making a deal privately. But I can tell you that the sheriffs in New Mexico are not going for it. And I don't think that that the courts are going to go for it either. Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's a pretty wild explosion.
Watch this too. Jim Fetzer and I were talking about this yesterday, but I want you to check this out, because these are films before they added the planes. Now, right here is where a plane, right, said the plane came crashing in, right around here, crashed in here. But note, this is a video before they added the planes or before you saw anything. Watch, there's no plane that comes in. Just watch right here. There's no plane that comes in. And the explosions that come out from each three side happen simultaneously, rather than, one explosion on this side that would never have pushed out here until the plane, first of all, it couldn't come through because we've got the core here, like you said, the steel and the concrete. It would have crashed in, stopped here. If it penetrated, it would be stopped here, and it would have blown up, but it would never come out here. But watch this. Boom, right? So it comes out here and here and here simultaneously. This is where the protrusion that they said came out, the nose of the plane. Watch it one more time. Just watch this. No plane. Just blows up. At the same time, simultaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jim Fetzer has said, and I agree with him, that these were holograms, that it was a hologram of a plane crashing into it, but not a real plane.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. But, I'll tell you, Scott, when we look at this, this kind of thing began in earnest in April 19th, 1993, at the Branch Davidian compound.
Yes.
Which was one of the most serious crimes ever perpetrated in American history. The government that, H.W. Bush would not do it, but as soon as the Clintons got in power, they went down there with the orders, burn them, mm-hmm, burn them. Mm-hmm. And, they gassed 53 women and children to death who were hunkered down in a school bus underground, and then burned the whole building down and incinerated those bodies, and then bladed them with a D8 cat. Right. And, then they were because people were so upset about this massacre of Christians engineered by Janet Reno.
Yes.
And Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
They turned around and said, oh, OK, well, what we need to do is we need to get in there and get some entrapment going with the Michigan militia. So they went in there with the defense intelligence contractor. What was his name? McNeil. No, what was his name? The guy who supposedly got the death penalty. I forget what his name was now.
You're talking about McVeigh.
Yeah, Timothy McVeigh.
Larry Nichols and McVeigh.
Yeah, and so Timothy McVeigh is doing the same thing they did to Randy Weaver. You need to commit this crime. Well, I don't want to commit the crime. You need to. I don't want to. You need to. I don't want to. And, you know, and so what happens at the Murrah office building in Oklahoma City? Oh, well, guess what? Two explosions, 14 seconds apart. One of them was from an ammonia-filled bus or truck in front of the building, which didn't do much damage. But the other one was a blast that blew all the rebar out this way.
Yes.
And brought the whole face of the building down. And conveniently, the daycare that was in that building and that had all these children, none of the ATF guys had any of their kids there. And the ATF guys were all conveniently out of the building when the building went down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know who else had been in Oklahoma City for 2 years before that? The top man from Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it was Sheikh Habib. I don't remember what his name was. Now, these names are all ancient history now. Yeah. But the fact is that this was an engineered, it was an engineered massacre for which there was no one held accountable at Branch Davidian in Texas, mm-hmm. followed by an engineered massacre in Oklahoma City. You know, in order to cover it up, the false flag to cover it up, that eventually results in this. That those two things there eventually resulted in this, mm-hmm. because they got away with it. Mm-hmm. Nobody to stop them. And so now you're surprised now that we've got it with that. You know, here's the Democrat thinking. Well, look, since George Bush terminated the Republic with the Patriot Act and this kind of outrageous event, what difference does it make if we steal the election? Mm-hmm. Right? There's no republic left anyway.
And well, the cars in the parking lot next to this building, there was a parking lot like over here somewhere where cars had their engines burned out, disintegrated. Judy Woods, Where Did the Towers Go, which is this book here, this is the cover of it, showed all these cars that look like the cars in Maui. And how could a building blown up disintegrate all of the cars? Because as Mike Harris said, Freon and the nuclear event had a effect. The nuclear event had an effect on the Freon of the cars that were in the parking lot and other things.
Well, I'm not going to say much more than that. I don't want to hurt the feelings of any of the families who lost loved ones in New York. And of course, there's lots of people whose heart is still ripped out with any of these pictures, you know, seeing this stuff with what happened at the towers, right?
Well, let's be clear. This was done by American citizens to American citizens. And I don't have any mercy anything but contempt and death penalty fury for people like Jeffrey Prather, who is some, you know, popular among some people. I think he's a liar and a traitor as far as I'm concerned, because I remember Jeffrey Prather saying, well, 9/11 was an intelligence failure. It was not an intelligence failure. That is an attempt to say, we didn't know the bad guys were coming. No, we knew exactly. We had financed, we had trained, we had enabled, we had positioned, we had set this up. So anyone that says this is an intelligence failure is a liar or a fool. And Jeffrey Prather, everyone has a chance to come to Jesus. Everyone has a chance to see the material, see the evidence, see the books, see the photographs, see the videos, talk to the experts, talk to Barbara Honegger, talk to Jim Fetzer, talk to Richard Gage, talk to Susan Lindauer, talk to everybody, Kevin Barrett, who's examined this, the architects and the engineers. And if you continue to say this is an intelligence failure, you are a fraud, a liar, and a limited hangout. And that's my opinion of Jeffrey Prather, a limited hangout and a traitor, because you don't get to say this is an intelligence failure once you know the truth. And if you don't look at the truth and you don't examine this, you are unworthy of being called anything military, because the American people recognize their military as those who are supposed to be those you can trust. Those are the defenders of our Constitution. And instead, we've got people all over the military who have been silent about this.
Well, they've betrayed the nation, you know, and they betrayed the nation because their loyalty isn't here. But, you know, again, Scott, when we talk about this failure of loyalty and we talk about this failure that's going on, we're at a point right now where we don't have, we've got very little time left in this nation.
Yes.
You made this point in your opening remarks here today, and I want to kind of go back to that and revisit that the world is going to isolate us.
Yes.
That is assuming that there is no destruction coming directly to the country. But with the de-dollarization, and the de-dollarization, by the way, and for those of you who are forecasters and you like to look at the prognosis of what's going to happen, the de-dollarization is going to be complete on January 1. And between now and January 1, what the United States does on the worldwide stage is going to make all the difference as to whether or not the world is going to have some mercy on us and say, gee, you guys are a meaningful part of the Brotherhood of Nations, or they're going to conclude that the United States is no part of the Brotherhood of Nations, that it's an unrepentant, aggressive bully, a perverted bully that has got no sense of decency whatsoever and needs to be completely ended.
Yeah. I'm sorry to say, I believe that's how it's going to be, Stephen. My instincts and spiritual intuition tell me exactly what you said is exactly how the world is going to treat us, because we are incapable in the military, in the diplomatic corps, in the intelligence communities, in the White House, in the Congress. We are incapable of reflection and humility and stopping and examining and admitting and a mea culpa moment. We are incapable of it. And if we're incapable of truth and honesty, then we're incapable of being forgiven.
It's the truth, Scott. And this is a very difficult problem that you're raising here. And it's a very interesting way you're putting it. You know, if you haven't repented before your maker, if you don't have a circumcised heart, if you haven't repented before your maker, you have no idea what repentance is. You don't know, you know, you take the position, never say you're sorry, never do this, never repent. I've never done anything wrong. Why do I have to repent? I don't have to repent of anything. Everything I do is right. And if anybody challenges me, well, then I one-up it. You know, then I just get more aggressive. Then I just get a bigger stick. Then I just keep one-upping it. Well, let me tell you something. That lack of humility and that lack of ability to repent is going to end up with the world turning against us. Now, take a look at how this plays out, Scott. Right now, the way it stands, we've had the top four oil producers in the world, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and UAE. They have all joined the BRICS. Now there is open discussion for the remaining of the OPEC nations to join BRICS. That's already going on right now, right? Now, one of the things that has been slowing up the Russian military from advancing in Ukraine has been a lack of the kind of ammunition they need to really advance. They need millions of rounds of howitzer shells. And Kim Jong-un has just agreed to provide those millions of rounds. And I don't know how many millions it is. I think it's over 10 million rounds that are going to be provided to Russia for howitzers. And the exchange was that Vladimir Putin agreed to give Kim Jong-un satellite technology, hypersonic missile technology, and ICBM technology that will allow him to reach America with nuclear weapons, with no more having to test missiles that can't do the job. He's getting Russian long-range missiles. Okay?
I will always stand with Russia, says North Korean leader. Kim Jong-un is making a rare foreign trip to meet with Putin. So here's what you're saying, Stephen. You're right on the money.
Yeah, well, they've met. They've met and they've reached an agreement. And the agreement is that Kim Jong-un is giving his artillery rounds to Russia in the millions, which means that Russia is going to be capable of mobilizing. Like the defense intelligence packet in Russia looks like this. They're not going to mobilize unless they can train and weaponize each person who's mobilized. In other words, you don't mobilize. You don't do like what they did in World War II. Here's three guys. You give one of them a rifle and tell him when he drops dead, you get his rifle. And when he drops dead, you get it. Right? That's what they told him when they marched him into Stalingrad. The Russians won't do that now. If they mobilize somebody, he's going to be trained. He's going to be armed. He's going to be positioned and he's going to be cared for. There's going to be food. There's going to be support. There's going to be supply trains. All of this stuff is going to be in place. So Putin was not going to do that until he had the munitions. Now he's got the munitions. So now you can expect to see a 700,000 man army begin to amass, and it's not going to amass. you know, they're not going to hang out there in Kharkiv or in Zaporozhye, right? It's going to be over the top of Kiev in short order and immediately to the Polish border. Now, as of today,
I would see them doing a pincer move, going around the borders of Ukraine to the Polish border and leaving the donut hole in the middle of Zelensky and everybody else and just sieging them and letting the good people, the decent people kind of filter out and leaving all the neo-Nazis and the Zelensky regime and just contain them in the middle of the circle. Yikes. And then gradually squeeze.
Yeah, that is the same protocol they used at Stalingrad. And when they used that protocol in Stalingrad, what they did was they completely surrounded the Germans in Stalingrad. And then the Germans said, we surrender. And the general said, not yet. We still have the whole winter to get through. when you guys have done cannibalism for 3 months, yes, we'll talk about your surrender then. But we're not doing it until you go through that period. Yep. So, I mean, let me hear Zelensky say it. Holodomor, right? The Holodomor is right in front of you again. And this time around, you know, you guys got it coming. You can't stop with the Nazi rhetoric. And, you know, it was very easy. You could have turned the corner if you'd just dropped the swastikas, but you couldn't do that. Once again, right, Scott, the hook is in the jaw. Yes. The hook is in the jaw. And it's just like you said about America, the hook is in the jaw. We can't get the hook out. We can't impeach a president when you have hard evidence of him taking a bribe from the communist Chinese. I don't think we should impeach him because that's not nice, said the uniparty leader heading up the House of Representatives.
Yes, yes.
So if we can't impeach a guy who's so completely demented he can't function, and you've got, you know, thousands of emails implicating him on crime, on crime, on crime, on crime, on crime, and you can't impeach him, then what good are you? You're completely dysfunctional. You have no meaning at all.
See, I see them doing their quickening maneuver. If they begin the impeachment, they're going to remove Biden. They're going to get Gavin Newsom into the vice presidency by hook or by crook, either killing Kamala Harris or removing her in some way to move Gavin Newsom in. And then they're going to kill or call a Biden to assassinate himself, or they're going to get rid of Biden, but they're going to do it in a guilt dramatic way to try and blame it on the Republicans. Blame it. They may even, I've said, blow up the White House with Zelensky and Biden in there, but I think they're going to quicken their timetable if the Republicans start to seriously expose a lot of this stuff. They're going to assassinate Biden before all this stuff can come out. The Republicans are going to be playing the cards one by one by one by one. Oh, look what he did to these little Chinese girls. Look at this video on Hunter Biden's laptop. Let's look at this. Let's look at this. Let's bring it all together. But the Democrats are going to kill him to try and say, okay, he's gone now. You killed him. Let's stop the inquiry. And Gavin Newsom is now the president.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's possible. I think Gavin Newsom has got a longer road than what he thinks, because it's going to be kind of hard to get by Kakala.
Well, I honestly, that's my instincts keep telling me they're going to get rid of Kakala. I like Kakala. She's a dead woman walking, if she's even a woman. But we'll
that's another question.
I honestly see them getting rid of her to move. Gavin Newsom is going to be their guy, I think, that they're going to try and put in there.
But yeah, I mean, who else are they? I mean, you know, you want to know my opinion. The best Democrat is RFK.
Oh, of course.
You know, and of course, the ideal Democrat ticket is RFK Tulsi Gabbard. That's the ideal Democrat ticket. Yeah.
It would be.
Period. That's the ideal ticket, right? And but you know, they're not. They're, you know, these Marxists that are hanging out in Detroit behind the postal workers union. You know, that group. You know, that's a group of muscle bound morons, if ever there was a group, right? And then you join them with the LGBT crowd running the AFL-CIO.
Yeah.
You know. And, you know, and so these are the people that are, you know, supposedly doing the machinations, you know, and this is why the hook's in the jaw. It can't come out. It can't come out, Scott. It cannot. So as a consequence, let's talk about January 1st of this upcoming of 2024.
Yeah.
January 1st of 2024, you're going to see, I think, over 100 nations join the BRICS.
Yes.
And right now, China is shedding its dollars. Russia is shedding its dollars. India is shedding its dollars. And to give you an example of how the power has shifted, the meeting of the G20, the U.S. went in there saying, Ukraine, 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 Ukraine. And India came back and said, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. We're not talking about Ukraine at all. We're not going to condemn Russia. And instead, we're going to demand the following things. And the G20 statement was one that had completely cast the United States rhetoric to the curb, not included at all. There wasn't even a compromise for the U.S. Dialogue. It was not included in their ultimate statement. And then, of course, Ukraine says those people in India are some of the dumbest people. They got real low IQs because they're Indians. And the Indian foreign minister came out and said, yeah, well, the difference between India and Ukraine is that we have put stuff on the moon and you're caught in the minefield. That's the difference between us stupid Indians and you guys, yeah, right? Yeah. So I think you're right about the pincer movement. I think you're right about that. I think it's going to be if the Ukrainians, and of course the Ukrainians struck a couple of ships at dry dock today in Sevastopol, including Stub, right? And they struck them with American cruise missiles.
Allegedly British. Well,
it was the British cruise missiles. Yeah, so, allegedly. And the Russian response to completely obliterate whatever is left of any port facility on the Ukrainian side.
Yeah.
Sorry, we left something up. I guess we're going to have to take out that little dock you got there, the whatever temporary thing you put up. And so, Russia has come out and said, oh, yeah, you could use British missiles to attack Russian port. Okay, yeah, there it is. Yeah, the Storm Shadow missiles. And so Russia has come out and said that Britain has been training Ukrainians to make terrorist strikes on Russian nuclear power plants.
Yes, we said that too. We said they were going to do that too.
But Putin has said there will be a price to pay. Now, I don't know if KC-3 knows this or not. He may not know it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what altitude he flies when he goes from London to Balmoral, when they're up there for their festivities.
Yeah.
But, there's two massive nuclear power plants up in York. I mean, I drove by them both, right? There was one that had 12 towers and another that had 9 towers. Mm-hmm. There's two huge nuclear power plants in the northern end of Britain. Mm-hmm. Do you think that a terrorist could strike those? You think the Russians don't know that? The Russians know it. Do you think there's anything vulnerable about you? Or are you guys just completely invulnerable with your 72,000 man army that's running around in women's clothing?
See, here's what I see happening, Stephen, is the Ukrainians are going to be the MS-13 gang that the U.S. uses as cat's paws to cause terrorist disruptions all throughout Europe and the Third World. It's like their new Al-Qaeda. They're going to use these Ukrainians because they're retarded, they're on drugs, they're neo-Nazis, to deploy them. Because, again, like you said, the hook's in the jaw. The Americans are incapable of, and it's a demonic delusion, incapable of pulling back of any sort of human civilized behavior. Now I believe they're going to, as all of this retraction and divorcing of the United States as January 1st happens, watch for the CIA and the Mossad and the US to start taking these disgruntled Ukrainians who are going to be kept in a state of madness and amplified in that madness, to be turned against Europe to make them more dependent on America. They betrayed us. They killed all of us. Yes, yeah. Look at how easy it was for the MK Ultra on the Ukrainians to make them hate Russia. That actually, they're their cousins. They didn't do anything to the Ukrainians. If it wasn't, I knew Ukrainians and Russians. It's astounding how much we've persuaded them to believe lies. But I just see. And you can tell me what you think about the Ukrainians being used as the cat's paws for the new Al-Qaeda to unleash terror in Europe and the Third World to make them dependent on America or something else. And
well, that's going to be the plan, but there's not going to be – none of that stuff is going to come to fruition. When we hit – between now and the de-dollarization on January 1st, you're going to see massive devaluation of the dollar.
Yes.
Massive. It could be 30, it could be 50. You're already starting to see banks closing. You're seeing electronic shutdowns. You're seeing ATMs not functioning. You're seeing PayPal dark for the night, Zelle dark for the night. You're seeing all of this stuff already starting to happen. These things are already, the cars, it's like if you're driving down the freeway and you get sputter, 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 and your car's going, that kind of gives you an indication you got a problem. And that's what's been going on in the financial community right now. I personally am projecting, and I believe we're going to see, a crash in the markets very similar to what we saw in October of 1929. We're probably going to see that in October of this year. It'll be a Black Friday or a Black Monday, something like this, where you're going to see a correction that just goes beyond all bounds. They're not going to be able to put the brakes on anything. It's just going to go through the floor. And they can shut down trading and do all the rest of that. And when the trading opens up the following day, it's going to be a 90% correction. And it's going to be a 90% correction in a very short period of time. Why? Because all of those stocks have been inflated through quantitative easing since 1998. There's no real value in any of those corporations. There's just a rigged casino table that allows New York brokers to make money and buy big condos. There's no real value in any of those corporations. They're gone. All their stuff is in China now. And, you know, and this whole fluff about trying to start a war with Taiwan, China just eclipsed Taiwan in terms of its chip manufacturing capability.
Yes.
You've got a chip that's four times greater than anything Taiwan's ever produced. It's in the new Huawei phone. So now they're trying to criminalize the Huawei phone so it can't be bought in the U.S., right? Well, too late. China already banned the iPhone in China, which caused a $22 billion market drop for Apple on the spot.
See, what's also interesting, and let me just say this, what we talked about before was the using Ukraine, Russia transforming Ukraine into the new metropolis of the BRICS multipolar world, where you have a new court, a new IMF, a new United Nations, a new, you know, you could have the BRICS phone. I mean, the derivative a brand of products, the sales promotion of this. You know, the new entity that is coagulating, it's like a new club, right? A new fraternity. Suddenly there's attraction, there's cachet, there's something new. There's
everyone. Oh, yeah, there would be an enormous attraction for that. You bet. And plus all the build out, you know, plus the chances of building Odessa as a modern, modern resort. On the Black Sea at that
time. As a sanctuary, a brain drain conduit for the best and brightest from the West that want to escape the rainbow flag, bug eating, transgender, sodomite, castrate your children, lunatic left. That will soon be launching internal wars against its own people.
Yeah, sure. And of course, the thing is, if that's going to be done, there is a core of Ukrainians that have not bought into this Nazi rhetoric. Yes. They have to keep their mouths shut. Yep. Many of them are already in America because they got out when they were being persecuted by the Nazis. Yep. Many of them are Ukrainian nationals, but Russian speakers. And I think a lot of it is going to be, I think you're going to see really the Russian speaking Ukrainians are going to be the ones that are going to end up taking control of Kyiv, and they're going to take control of Odessa. And it's going to be the language of the Ukrainian language is going to be a sidelined language.
Yes.
It's going to be also taught in the schools, but it's going to be a sideline language. And Russian is going to become the dominant language. And when it does, you're going to see the rise of Russian Orthodox Church again. And those huge churches and monasteries that are in Ukraine are going to be back open. And then there's going to be a move to recapture all of those icons that have been looted out of those churches. Mm-hmm. Anybody who thinks you can go into a church and loot, oh, I'm going to steal that icon, I'm going to steal that cross, that candelabra, that Ark of the Covenant, and then we'll sell it on the global market. Let me tell you something. Those searches go on forever and ever. And when they found, they repatriate them. I mean, that's what's going to happen. And so all that stuff, anybody who buys any of those artifacts is going to be buying into a black market that's going to get you caught. It's a certainty you're going to get caught.
And every Zelensky house, mansion, and item is going to be destroyed or captured or taken. But everything that he has bought or they think they have, the Russians are going to get. They're very methodical.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, when you have global sanctions where you seize Russian assets, the Russians are going, well, you know, okay, look, you seize them. And then when this war is over, we're getting it back with interest. And then we're probably going to go after you in an international criminal court for an unlawful sanction, an unlawful seizure. And then let's see what happens to you.
Yeah. Based in Ukraine, by the way. That's the irony of everything. If they take Ukraine and make it their own city. Sorry, Ukrainian is now Gaelic. The new language is Russian. Gaelic versus English, right? So everything that the West thinks it's going to achieve with Ukraine is going to go the opposite. There's going to be no weapons. It's going to be neutral. Good. There's going to be a whole new migration and filtration of people, the new people coming into Ukraine. I think I could see it being more of an international neutral state. But I mean, they have a chance to redefine Ukraine as the model nation where, you know, China and all these other nations like Iran and elsewhere contribute to the rebuilding. And that whole country could be rebuilt in a year. And the people, the poor civilians that have lost their homes and have suffered and have been killed by the maniacs of the neo-Nazis, here's, you know, a home, a villa, a state, a car, a mule, a condo, and something else. They'll be enriched like never before because of the suffering.
Can it be done in a year? I don't know, Scott, but I can tell you that the, you know, there's going to have to be a real strong rule of law.
Yes.
Ukraine. It has to be a strong rule of law. And the reason I say that is because it's the most corrupt country in the world right
now.
Yes. And so you have this. And this was the problem that Georgia had coming out of the Soviet Union. It immediately fell into corruption with an expectation of corruption and an expectation, a communist expectation. I get my electricity paid. I get my rent paid and I get a certain amount of food per month and I'm going to drink wine and do nothing else. So what are you talking about hitting me with an electric bill? They literally killed the first guy that charged an electric bill.
And the Americans wanted it that way because in that chaos, that philosophical moral confusion, they could manipulate, steal, coerce, put their own people in power. I mean, corruption and chaos is the new water that America wants to continually spread into the rest of the world. That's
Our ability to spread is, you know, we're going to be banned from every outhouse. I mean, that's the bottom.
We're going to have every embassy kicked out of every country, I would say. I mean, I'm waiting for the Africans to do that, but I think that's part of the domino effect. Say, and I said this a year ago, kick out the U.S. embassy. I'm waiting to see that. No, we don't need you. We don't need your people. We don't need any economic, social, any engagement with you. We don't need the American, the transgender, all the perversion and the sickness that you represent. You are the leper to the world. We don't need your embassies. I'm just waiting for that to happen. It seems totally natural for that next moral trigger to be hit, that switch. Like, you know, come to think of it, why are we having any relationship with them?
Well, once the de-dollarization is complete, that's going to be the case. I mean, once, you know, the only reason we have your embassy here at all is because we're on the dollar. Now we're off the dollar. So what? You know what your embassy is to me? It's a visit from Victoria Nuland.
Yes.
And for all I know, she's down here trying to beef up a color revolution against my government.
That's right.
That's as far as I can tell, because that's who she is. Isn't this the woman that runs around the world starting color revolutions?
Right.
On behalf of the Soros Foundation, why would we want your embassy here when the only person we ever see is Victoria Nuland?
Yeah.
You know, no, the answer is no. And so with the de-dollarization, Scott, it's going to become more and more powerful between now and January 1st. You're going to see more countries getting on board. That freight train has left the town and it's gaining momentum. And more countries are getting on board. All the oil suppliers are getting on board. Food suppliers are getting on board. The technology suppliers are getting on board. And when you get all of that together, who's left? A bunch of Aussies who are hunkered down, waiting behind a mask, waiting for the next vaccine. The communist neo-Nazi Trudeau regime in Canada, where everybody can't watch the news anymore and they can't speak at all.
And they throw Pawlowski and other pastors that have the balls to stand up and preach the gospel. They get thrown in jail.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what is this country that used to be Canada? It's not a republic anymore. It's a Nazi dictatorship being controlled by Klaus Schwab, to whom Justin Trudeau is loyal. He's not. Justin Trudeau has not one cell in his body that's loyal to Quebec or to Canada. And neither does Chrystia Freeland. They're all loyal to Herr Schwab.
Yes.
And so, I mean, here we are, you know, and it's the same thing with KC3. KC3 in Britain, he doesn't have long as his tenure as the king. Yeah. He already knows. He's so disrespected in the nation that he's already given hints that he's going to abdicate for William.
Yeah,
that's already in the wind, right? And, you know, he was, you know, he didn't have enough courage and enough guts, and pardon my French, but enough brains to stand up to the EU and these WEF sycophants and to allow a closet Nazi like Bojo and the babysitter, Liz Truss, to take power in that country.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is
and the kind blow of up the Nord Stream pipeline, blow up the religion of climate change, environmentalism that the Europeans adore. You're going to blow this up.
Well, if that's your God, then guess what? If that's your God, then be prepared to live in poverty and to have your nation overthrown by people who have a sense of reality. Mm-hmm. And which is it's happening in France. It's happening in Germany. It's going to happen across the center of that country. I mean, to the point that the Italian prime minister is now dumping $3 billion into a fund to can you keep your refugees home, please? Right. And of course, you saw what happened in Libya, right? 10,000 dead. 10,000 dead in Libya. And that's in the slave trade cities.
Yeah.
Right. Guess what? Judgment comes when you're engaged in sin.
Yeah. Yeah. Stephen, we're out of time. God bless you. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been enlightening, and we hope people will continue to heed your words, because that certainly is very profound and prophetic on January 1, the de-dollarization. This is a time for people to stock up on their materials, all of the things that you need to live by. And we encourage people also to get your natural healing and health in order. We offer the Indian Black Salve. Go to destroy-cancer.com. For that was a healing cancer therapeutic for me. It got rid of the cancer I had on my back. It heals also other forms, tumors and breast cancer and things. And we predict it's going to be dissolving the blood clots that are caused by the COVID-19 vaccine. Dr. Mercola has talked about the rubber blood clots and they don't dissolve. Well, the Indian Black Salve goes after any unnatural tumors or things in the body. So we're expecting fully anyone who's got the vaccine with blood clots, the Indian Black Salve will go and digest it. So go to the website and you'll see the information and the pictures about that.
May digest it. It's possible that this is how it works, right?
Possible that it works. It may digest it. We're putting our hope and faith into that, but we encourage people to do your research. We never give medical advice, of course, just our own testimony. So that's my testimony. The pictures up there corroborate it. Stephen Pidgeon, any final words before we click off? Go ahead.
Well, you know, I just think, Scott, that we live in America as Americans. I no longer live in the United States of America, because the United States of America no longer exists. But I live in America. My children are American. I'm an American. And so I call myself an American. And my national anthem is America the Beautiful. Okay, it's not God Save the Queen. And it's not the Star Spangled Banner, which doesn't exist anymore. The banner that is over the United States is a 10-colored LGBTQ flag. I'm not pledging allegiance to that flag. I am an American. I look for the beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain. This is the America I look to. And I look to my brothers and sisters who remember America and who are American in their heart and soul. We speak an American form of English. We don't speak the Queen's English. We speak an American form of English because we're American people. People who were born to the east of the Mississippi or to the west of the Mississippi, to the south of the Mason-Dixon line, you know, on the coast of California. You know, I'm up in the far northern reaches of Alaska, but I could tell you we're Americans. And as Americans, we have a different soul in a different context. And we're not represented by these perverts, these blood drinkers, these children sacrificers, these militants that always have to be at war, these ruthless killers and murderers and mafiosos and all these. That's not America. America is your brother and sister. America is the people that you meet when you used to drive up to the hamburger drive-in to order that hamburger and the Tom and Jerry shake and maybe the fries. And there's somebody, you know, you got your guy sitting next to you playing a song you know on the radio, right? That's America. It's not this other stuff. It's not this other stuff. And, you know, and when all of this dust settles and these perverts are completely disposed of, which Yah is going to do, then let us once again rebuild the America that we knew and that we know. Let's do it.
Amen. Come quickly, Lord Jesus, and let God arise and his enemies be scattered. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen Pidgeon. And thank you for joining us on GlobalFreedomTV.com. We will see you tomorrow. God bless. Good night. All right, brother.